Hey there. You're listening to This Song, the podcast where artists talk about the songs that formed and transformed them. I'm your host, Elizabeth McQueen, and this week on This Song, we'll be hearing from Ian Graham, lead singer and guitarist for Austin's The Well. But before we get started, I want to let you know that here at This Song, we are gearing up to make another listener episode. So if you haven't heard our first listener episode, you should totally go and do that. And then you should tell us your story. Like, we want to know, do you have a story about a song that changed your life? Well, we would love to hear it. All you have to do is record it to a voice memo and send it to us at thissong@kutx.org. We can't wait to hear what you have to say. And now to Ian Graham. He's the lead singer, songwriter, and guitar player for the Austin Power Trio, The Well. They are the KUTX Artist of the Month for April. The Artist of the Month is something we do here at the station where we, like, laser focus on one Austin band every month. They play in our live performance studio called Studio 1A. They do a My KUTX guest DJ set. We play their music a lot on the radio, and I get to speak to them for this podcast. The Well plays music that mixes so much rock, metal, psych, doom, punk, goth, like it's all there. The band is helmed by Graham, who often shares vocal duties with bassist Lisa Alley, and drummer Jason Sullivan rounds out their sound in this heavy way. And their latest release, set to come out on April 26, is entitled Death and Consolation. And it is like a heavy exploration of a heavy time in Ian Graham's life. I spoke to Ian right before the band recorded their My KUTX guest DJ set, and he told me about a song he heard when he was just a kid that made him understand what music could, like, really do.
I'm going to have to say, strangely enough, probably just people who know me, but Ocean Size by Jane's Addiction off Nothing Shocking. I was probably 9 or 10 years old, and I was spending the night at a friend's house, and I had just found the Dead Milkmen, and he had a Dead Milkmen tape, and he was recording it, so he filled up one side with the Dead Milkmen album, and then he filled the other side with Nothing Shocking by Jane's Addiction. And I was like, okay, whatever, I'd heard like a song by them before, I was like, that's fine, but I really wanted to hear the Dead Milkmen. Anyway, the next day, this is like fall time in Southern Illinois, and it's very densely wooded, and it had been raining, everything's wet, and there's leaves on the ground, it's cold, and we were walking through the woods, and I had listened to the whole Dead Milkmen album. I flipped the tape over, and Jane's Addiction started playing. The album was cut into where, like, I don't think Oceanside is the first song, but for some reason it was on this, and it was that intro. The guitar is like, like this little build, and then like an explosion, and it was just like a wave hitting. The drums recorded right in the front right there, just kind of smacking you, just this gnarly bass. Like, the way it sat and moved was like water, but like kind of tumultuous water. I don't know, but it brought me out like to a beach that was foggy and like watching waves crashing like immediately. And that was really profound. Like, and I became obsessed with that album because of that.
Sounds like you had like this full sensory experience.
Yes.
Where like the song,
it was almost visual, yeah,
took you to another place. Mm-hmm. Was that one of the first times you'd experienced that?
I mean, I've always when I listen to music, I've always seen stuff. Like I've just been that way since I was a little kid. It like weird waves and stuff like that. I'll see her colors all the time since I was little. But this was the first time I was thrown into like a maybe a, like somebody else's movie. Like it's weird. like if our particular realities are our own movies, I was brought into somebody else's.
So were you listening to it over and over to like have that experience over and over of going to that beach?
Yeah. And the whole album is very moody, and the concepts were really strange, like the things that they talked about. And also I'm 10 years old, so it was like very sexual too, and I thought that was really interesting. Especially then, it was like, oh, this is so, it was just made me feel strange. And the stuff that he talks about, it's really hypersexual, kind of nihilistic, and it was really interesting to a 10-year-old boy, you know, like super R-rated, you know, and not in the sense that it's just swearing and talking about whatever. I mean, this is very sensual and odd, you know. It was very odd, and yeah, it was almost gave me the creeps.
Was this kind of your first experience of really like allowing yourself to dive into something that really did make like kind of creep you out?
Oh no, I always look for things that creep me out.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like I like to go down dark hallways since I was a little boy and just like scare myself.
Oh really?
I always stayed up late and watched horror movies when everybody else was asleep alone. And I would always freak myself out. I was always trying to like play in areas where I shouldn't, like most of my life.
Oh, really?
Definitely. So yeah. It's got me into a lot of trouble, but it was all fun and worth it, so whatever.
So when did you start playing music?
I started playing at about 16. I started playing drums. Mm-hmm. My dad gave me his, I lived with my dad for a year then. He gave me his drum set, and he would make me play every night when I got home. And then I switched to bass, then I switched to guitar.
At what point did you realize that you could do the same thing for other people that like Jane's Addiction had done for you?
I moved to Bryan, Texas. Yeah, I moved there when I was 12, and then I met friends, and I was in a band when I was 16. We would do like psychedelic stuff. Like we would cover like everything from Velvet Underground covers and Hendrix, anything we kind of like the guitarist could scrape together. But we would play parties in this trailer out in the middle of nowhere. We play these parties for these people, and we're talking methy. I mean, and this is like 1996, maybe, you know, 97. Just real, but real. It was so gnarly, and they would get so drunk and crazy, and we were just kids, but they would get so turned on by it. I was like, this is just where I'm pretty much gonna stay, I think, you know.
Like, this is, I just want to do this.
Yeah, I just want to make people do this. Yeah.
You start on drums, you get to bass, and then you start playing guitar. Did you start playing guitar so that you could write songs?
No, I wrote songs even when I played drums.
So you've been songwriting since you started playing.
I wrote poems before then.
Oh, wow. So you've been writing like...
Since I was about 15 or 16, yeah. I went to a therapist right when I was like 15. And I had a problem with drugs, like from a very young age. So moms take me to therapy and... a very good therapist, and he turned me on to poetry. He's like, well, you seem to have this nervous system. I'm like, yeah, blah blah blah. But then he would send me home with stuff to read. Like, he turned me on to Ezra Pound. That changed everything to where I wasn't just in this nihilistic self-destructive mode. Not completely, I mean, definitely I was still in self-destructive mode for a long time after that, and sometimes even more recently. But I was able to have an outlet and not feel like an alien as much. Like, it was weird, like reading that stuff. And that was kind of the beginning. So I gave my you know, I threw my hat in and I started writing, you know, a little bit too. I always needed that outlet, like no matter what it was, because this is for me. I mean, what I'm doing. I mean, like, it belongs to everyone else, but it's for me, you know, and it always has been. Like, I have to do this, and when I don't have to do it anymore, I won't do it anymore.
So, know? So making music is something that you, like, you have to do.
Yeah, well, you know, in a form. Yeah. You know, I have to do the initial process of it. I don't think that I would go through giving it to other people and making a big song. I don't have to do that, but I have to sit at home and I have to have these beginnings, or like the verse and a chorus. I have to be doing that. Like, those would exist no matter what. The fact that I have a band, things are kind of rolling well. Yeah, of course, you want to make the song. It's awesome, but I don't know if I would make whole songs, but I would definitely knock out these pieces constantly.
How did the well kind of come out of everything that you had done?
I liked dark stuff and like psychedelic stuff, but I played in bands that kind of sound like Kinks or the Libertines and stuff like that. I was really into that stuff. And I ended up working with, there was a band in Austin called The Roller, and they were brutal sludge band, and they were fantastic and one of the best. So I was working with Mike, the lead singer of The Roller, and we had a lot of laughs together, but I was always like, you know, like, what is it you listen to? I mean, like, is it all Black Sabbath? Because I love Black Sabbath. It's always been my favorite band in the whole world. It's always been Black Sabbath, no matter what I was playing. But Mike was like, well, there's this whole genre of music that kind of came out of Black Sabbath. I'd heard of Pentagram and stuff, but I didn't ever listen to it. And he turns me on to all these bands. And I had just gotten kicked out of the band I was in before. And I had no project going on. And he lets me listen to Pentagram, and I'm like, oh shit, that does sound like Black Sabbath, but it's awesome. It's got its own thing going. It's not like a ripoff. And then Sir Lord Baltimore, he just starts turning me onto all this stuff, and then stuff like Sleep. I was sitting right riffs. So I got with Lisa, and I had a bass drum that was mine in the garage and a guitar, and I sat there and I banged out riffs, and we would sing together, because she can sing very well, and so we would sing together, and I would come up with these things, and it was the most liberating experiences ever, like as far as music goes. It was like, this is where I'm supposed to be. Like, I felt it personally, like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing. And I felt like I was home. It was strange. It's so fun. And I like the low-end drone of it. It's like Mike Monk's chanting to me. I like the repetition, the hypnosis of it. Like, it's like therapy. I like my clothes to vibrate when I play. I like the hypnotic aspect of it. I like to hypnotize myself while I'm hypnotizing other people. And then it's working properly.
Then it sounds like you're kind of doing to other people what that ocean size did to you,
trying,
you know?
Like, trying, yeah. Being a musician is not a normal profession. It's not a normal, like, that's not a normal impulse, I don't believe. You know, I don't think it is. I mean, it's really odd to have to get up there. And you get so addicted to it.
There is something addictive about making music in front of people, and when it really connects.
Yeah.
Like, when that thing happens where you can really kind of, like, you lose kind of a sense of yourself.
You lose yourself. That's the thing. Outside of yourself, yeah.
Yeah.
Giving yourself wholly to something, and maybe that's what like a religious experience is, like what saints felt in the rapture of the divine, or whatever it is. Like, it's probably something like that. It's like some weird psychological switch is flipped, you know, rapture.
This is Raven from the Wells' upcoming record, Death and Consolation. And man, that feeling of giving yourself over to the moment and the music, well, I've only recently even thought of it in the same realm as religious experience. In fact, the first time I thought about it was in an interview with another artist of the month for this podcast. Kara Tillman from Austin's Moving Panoramas described that feeling as spirit, which I'd never thought of before. And it is really addictive. It's a thing that you can chase as a musician, I'm not going to lie. The Wells' new record will come out on Ridin' Easy Records on April 26th. If you head to the show notes page for this episode, you can find a link to pre-order that record, which will come out on CD and vinyl. You actually have a couple of choices as to what color vinyl you can get, which is really cool. And the band's going to be celebrating the release of their new record all over town and then heading out on tour. I'll post a link to their tour dates on the show notes page for this episode. And as always, you'll be able to find a Spotify playlist there where you can listen to all the songs we referenced in this episode all the way through. And that's it. You have come to the end of another episode of This Song. This song is a production of KUTX 98.9 in Austin, Texas. This episode was produced by Art Levy and me, Elizabeth McQueen. Thanks to our interns, Felix Kimbrell, Emily Wilson, Wes Sims, and Simone Puglia for all their help. Thanks to Deidre Gott and Peter Babb and Todd Callahan for all they do for this podcast. And yes, it is true. Our theme song is Mahout by Austin's own Hard Proof. Right on. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next time.